Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Exit interviews are over. Have we seen the last of D'Angelo Russell in LA? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. No matter how or where you get your podcast, it's always going to be free. It's never going to be behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to hang out with over 17,000 subscribers, all of whom are gearing up for the offseason. We appreciate all of the support that that channel has been given throughout this season and into the offseason. A lot to catch up on with LeBron James. Andy, he says he's better than 90, maybe even 95% of the league. We'll talk about whether or not he's correct and whether or not that's actually good enough. Crazy with numbers. But first, Andy, let's talk D'Angelo Russell, because I don't think there is a player who is taking more flack for the results of the series, the 4-0 sweep against the Denver, the Denver Nuggets, than D'Lo. And I don't think there's a player among their free agents or potential free agents or guys they control but may not bring back or whatever, who is more widely assumed by many fans not to be coming back than D'Lo, or at the very least, not wanted to come back than D'Lo.
Yeah, Anthony Davis might want D'Lo back, just if nothing else, to have a nice, convenient meat shield. Like, you know, all the time everybody's spent criticizing D'Angelo Russell, they're still criticizing Anthony Davis, but just not quite as much. The attention gets divided a little bit, spread around. Once it's a little more diluted, it doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah, but you, I mean, would you agree with that framing that both he is the guy taking the most blame, and he is also the person, like, when you see fans putting out their lists and it's on the Locked On Lakers YouTube channel and they tweet us at Cam Brothers and all that, who would bring back this guy, that, boom, 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 boom. D'Lo is never on those lists.
Yeah, like, I mean, look, Anthony Davis takes a lot of heat and could be polarizing in his own right. He didn't lose his game four starting spot to Mo Bamba. You know, I mean, like, let's keep everything in perspective.
Can you imagine? We were just a little disappointed in Anthony's effort in game three, so we've decided to go with Mo, change things up a little bit. And you know, coming off the bench should focus Anthony Davis a little bit more for game four.
Be interesting, because considering I think AD had like 28-18 in game three. That's a very high standard. Certainly would be a choice by Darvin Ham. But yeah, D'Lo, I mean, look, D'Lo has been a polarizing player his entire career, going back to when he entered the league with the Lakers. And, you know, that stint for D'Lo with the Lakers, you and I were actually around the team a lot, and we were around D'Angelo Russell a lot.
And yeah, we're doing pre and post game for ESPN, writing about him, all that stuff.
Right. So, I mean, we heard from fans firsthand how polarizing he was, but you also saw up close some of the things about D'Angelo Russell that could make him polarizing, even though, I mean, full disclosure, I actually liked D'Lo and I found his, you know, personality interesting and at times kind of quirky, but I can also see where he can rub people the wrong way, including, I'm guessing, some of his comments during the exit interview, which we will explore, which I think if fans were looking to see some type of like humble pie promise for a redemption story through hunger and just an unrelentless drive to be better, they didn't see it during.
No, let's get to that. Like, because you and I think both found different aspects of what Russell was talking about interesting, but I think it is all reflective of his sort of basic POV, his sort of ethos about basketball, about his own talent and all that. But start with your stuff, because I think that's the stuff like that fans would connect with most instantly, because I do agree with you. When it comes to these sorts of situations, when a player plays poorly like he did, they want contrition. That's a good word for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was, there was one part when he was asked about, you know, his bad series against Denver and just sort of his whole experience. And he said, you know, first of all, he mentioned just it was cool to be there, you know, being a part of the Western Conference Finals, which is the furthest D'Lo's ever gone in the playoffs. But I'm sure for a lot of fans, that smacks of happy to be there, which they're not going to want to hear, particularly when you didn't play like somebody who frankly should have been happy to be there. You know, he said, quote, "I can't really complain about anything other than the ball going in when I wanted it to."
Which is, I guess, his very sideways way of noting, I didn't shoot the ball very well.
Right. He described the season as a complete success, which in certain respects, look, it is. Like, from a realistic standpoint, turning things around from the point where he arrived to where things finished, that is a success story by any reasonable measure. You just have to keep in mind that Lakers standards are never reasonable. Mm. But that is by any realistic standard. But then also, too, I think this is the point where if people had their antenna up about D'Angelo with some skepticism, this won't help. He was asked about things that he would work on or refine over the summer, and he said, quote, "At this point in your career, to be honest, I feel like you're you, and I'm nice. I ain't worried about my game. I know who I am as a player. I know what I'm capable of. I can win games. I can be better than your point guard. I can be better than your shooting guard," which is not necessarily what people want to hear coming off a series. Right. When he was not.
I mean, I guess it depends on who your point guard and shooting guard are. But
in this particular one, he got housed by Jamal Murray and Kentavious Caldwell.
Not that one, but right. Other ones. Right.
Right. And, you know, he also had mentioned, like, you know, you, coming into the season, wanting to improve different elements of shooting, in particular as a catch and shoot player, which, to be fair, he did. And, you know, he said that his main goal in the offseason was to stay in shape, keep working on his body, not let up on that. But then he also said, quote, "I don't think I'm ever going to get better at going right. I don't think I'm going to be fast enough to break down your best defender in an ISO. That's not my game. Just going to continue what I already have, my spots, where I get my spots, where I'm aggressive, just to understand those spots more. I think that's where I can get better." And, like, on one hand, that is going to feel like a player who is too satisfied with where he is, who he is, like he's got everything sewed up. And D'Angelo is, we've talked about this before, somebody that reeks of alpha male and reeks of confidence. He has a very confident air about him. He has, again, ever since he entered the league as an immature 19-year-old. He just always has. Mm-hmm. I also think, though, for somebody like D'Angelo Russell, who is by NBA standards not athletic, he's not fast, he's not strong, he is somebody that really has to get by on craft and specific craft. You always should want and need to get better, but I think you also have to maintain a real confidence about what I am is good enough, because there are certain things about D'Angelo Russell as a player he can't transform. He just can't do it.
Well, and I have a lot to say about his comments, starting from the stuff about, you know, his game being nice, and then especially the stuff where he was talking about, you know, leaning into his skill set. So let's get to that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by eBay Motors, and for a championship team, it's all about making sure every player is a perfect fit. It's the same when it comes to your vehicle. Every part needs to be just right. So the next time you need parts and accessories, head to eBay Motors with eBay Guaranteed Fit. You can always make sure every part you need fits right the first time around. Just add your ride to My Garage and look for the green check to know that the part will fit or your money back. And just like in sports, confidence, just ask D'Angelo Russell, is the name of the game, unless it's against Denver. When you shop on eBay Motors, and with over 122 million parts to choose from, you'll be back in the game in no time. After all, it's easy to bring home a win when the right parts are guaranteed. Get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices on ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, I mean, look, I am not really interested, never have been, in the theater of like players going out, you know, public contrition, or like, is it nice to have accountability? Yes, but accountability is really shown in how you prepare for the next season, how you play on the floor and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I remember, you know, this goes back a ways, but like when JD Drew was on the Dodgers and, you know, everybody get mad at him, he strike out and he just kind of go put his bat in the rack and sit down because he just didn't ever show any emotion, like, ever. And there are a lot of players who are like that, you know, and they just don't show, you know, you would, they would benefit from being seen to punt a basketball into the upper deck or take a, you know, take their bat and just wipe out the Gatorade rack and all that, and just annihilate something. Then they've got the fire and people care. I will leave it up to others who are around D'Angelo Russell every day to tell me that he cares or this or that. And I'm assuming he does because, you know, he's carved out a pretty good NBA career. You got to care at least a little bit for it. when he talks about the season being a success, I think particularly when you look at what he did in LA, he was at or above pretty much every career norm, career average that he has. You know, he shot 41% from three as a, you know, in 17 games as a Laker. He averaged 17 and a half points, which is about like right what you would expect him to do. Like all of this stuff is, you know, his win shares per 48, all these other things were like right where D'Angelo Russell should be or a little bit better. So I think he played well on balance. And I think he had some bad games and some really, really great moments in the first two rounds of the playoffs as well. The parts, though, that I think are fascinating that get to, I think, why people are so kind of polarized on him is his evaluation of how he gets better. And it's by leaning into his own skill set. He's correct. He's not going... not in meaningful ways. He can work on his diet. He can work, but like D'Angelo Russell's not going to get fast. He can work on going right and he can improve that stuff. And he will, these guys all practice everything, but he's never going to be known for, he's not going to suddenly create, you know, massive skill sets out of thin air. They're like that stuff's not going to be there, but what he can be is excellent at the stuff that he is capable of and responsible for. And I just took all of it to be, I asked him actually too about the, you know, the playoffs.
I wanted to get to that because his response to your question, which I thought was an interesting one, was equally interesting.
The question was basically, you had really good moments and some really terrible moments in the playoffs. And he certainly didn't question the premise. Like he wasn't like, you know, I thought I was pretty good the whole time. How do you even that out? How do you make it so the consistency is there through from series to series to series? And his answer was essentially, you know, the playoffs are all about adjustments and you have to make them, but you have to figure out what is the right adjustment to make and what is an adjustment that actually takes me away from my own game. What is something that he's like, you can make adjustments. You can get so like in your head, you can get so worried about these things that you actually weaken your game by trying to change it, by trying to do something different and adapt because you play away from the ways that you're a capable player and the things that make you strong. Those two answers are related. Picking out something like leaning into his skill set and trying to determine what is the line between adjusting and changing your game in a way that's actually destructive. And all of it speaks to the fact that this guy is a thinker more as much as he is, you know, a quote unquote athlete.
We've talked about this before. D'Lo is actually a really bright guy. He was actually, again, even as an immature 19-year-old, you could tell D'Angelo is a bright guy. And that has always shown itself. And sometimes, I mean, cerebral athletes, like highly cerebral, can be interesting in a lot of different ways. You know, when you talk about somebody like LeBron or Kobe or, you know, Jokic, Draymond Green, like the guys who see the entire board and like an extended board on top of it, that's a fascinating type of athletic intelligence. Mm-hmm. There are the guys who are cerebral in ways that can be thoughtful. There are guys that can be cerebral where they sometimes get in their own head. And then there's sometimes guys like D'Angelo, who I think is a thinker, he is very confident in the way he expresses himself.
Well, I see it as just a guy who's not giving you the sort of stock answer. Mm-hmm.
That's a better way of putting it. Yeah.
You know, he's thinking about what he's saying. Like he is not just going to be like, yeah, you know, you got to make adjustments and it's this and that, whatever. But because I think when he answers these questions, he understands he is in a lot of ways defending himself. He's defending his approach to basketball. He understands that a lot of people think he isn't good. He understands not that people don't think he's good, that people think he's overrated or that he's not good enough to play on a championship caliber team or all these other things. Now, I will say, like, I think he's a good player. I think he played well for the Lakers. And, you know, I guess sort of as we get into the next segment, I guess the big question sort of is, are fans, Lakers fans, right in looking at him as somebody who's like automatically gone or can't possibly be back or can't contribute to a championship team or was exposed in the postseason as a guy who just isn't good enough? And I think the answer to that question is no. I don't think that's true. I think he is like many players who are not at that elite level. Are
good but not great.
But not great. They're vulnerable to matchups that hurt them. You know, and he's one of those guys, and there's no question. But if he had shot 35% or 38% from three-point range in this series, like he is fully capable of doing, and like Denver didn't do anything.
Or just I think, 30 or just 30% as 30, opposed to
32, like 14, right, 15, yeah. Whatever it was. Like there wasn't anything Denver was doing. There wasn't anything, you know, it wasn't sort of inherent inadequacy that got him to miss shots against the Nuggets that, you know, similar shots that he made against the Warriors or made against the Grizzlies. That's a shot selection, all these other things, but his shot selection is always a little bit questionable. That was bad luck as much as anything and bad timing. I am a person who believes, and maybe we can look at this for the next segment, that it's fine to let D'Lo go or trade him or put him in another, you know, put him in another uniform. But as it's related, especially to the LeBron conversation that we'll have either later, you know, at the end of next segment, or I guess going into Thursday.
Let's table it for Friday.
If you don't replace D'Angelo Russell with something, if you just say, oh, we don't need to spend $23 million on that. If you don't replace him, don't replace the skill set. Don't replace the 17.5 points a game. Don't replace. You are leading yourself to a lot of potential trouble on a team that is built around LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So that is what we can discuss next. All right. So I used up a lot of that segment. So I am a person who thinks that they either need to bring back D'Angelo Russell, and he's not going to make $30 million. He's not going to make.
No.
I think he's.
Nobody's offering him that.
Nobody's going to offer him that. I think it wouldn't shock me if D'Lo ended up under 20, you know, somewhere, you know, in the 2 and 35, you know, 2 and 40, 2 and 45, somewhere in between, you know, 35 and 45 for a 2-year contract or something like that is, I think, about where he ends up. And I could see the Lakers saying, it's too much, like with the luxury tax and this, that, whatever, not worth it. I think I would pay that in a heartbeat, both for the player and for the roster building. But just focusing just on the player, I think if you don't replace that, you got to go find the skills and the production somewhere else. And I don't think they'd be able to do it.
Well, I mean, a couple things before we even get into that. Broadly speaking, I think you're correct. As far as the idea of it not being as much about Denver, those struggles as some of this being timing or luck, I disagree. I think Denver had better wing players to throw at him defensively and more difficult covers for him and more defensive attention that he had to pay it to. I think Denver was a bad matchup.
I agree with that completely. I'm just saying he missed a lot of open shots that were not related to how the Nuggets were defending him. He missed a ton of
that. May be, but I think, but that can also be the byproduct of a matchup that is wearing on you.
Could be.
I mean, you and I both said heading into this series, we thought it was going to be a difficult series for D'Angelo. You could just see where it would be on paper. So
yeah, especially defensively, that's really where his
defensively, but also again,
problem is.
I feel like they had it was difficult for him to hunt the matchups that he wanted. I think it was easier for them to hunt the matches against D'Angelo they wanted. So I
don't think any of that is wrong. I just don't think it explains 14%.
I think it helps explain it. I don't think it is the sole reason, but I do think it is a
fair enough.
It's a part of it. The other thing I wanted to get into that I thought was interesting when you were talking about the adjustments, when you asked D'Angelo that question, when he talked about, you know, that fine line between scaling back some of your own game, like from what you would consider the best version of yourself to what you would consider the second best version of yourself, maybe even the third best version of yourself, but what would be the best version of yourself for your team for that particular series. The word he actually used was scary. And, you know, he was talking about getting outside your comfort zone that way. And I just so people don't run wild with this, he didn't mean it like you're cowering in fear over this. He's talking about the how it can be just scary for athletes to get out of, or people really, to get outside of their comfort zones and have to
when
try
you start
to,
doing things that are very different from them what you're expected, you're not only you're opening yourself up to the chance that it may not work, you're opening yourself up to criticism that, you know, you're screwing it up worse. And by the way, you're also potentially letting your teammates down by breaking out stuff in your game that you don't normally do.
Well, to this point though, or you start either breaking out things you don't normally do or not do the things that you can do, but because of either the matchup or roster construction or whatever, that's not what's being asked of you. Jared Vanderbilt talked about during his exit interview, you know, because his role increasingly reduced over the course of the playoffs, particularly compared to what he was asked to do during the regular season.
Right.
And he talked about how during the regular season, a lot of that time was without LeBron or occasionally without LeBron and D'Lo. So some of what we saw from Jared Vanderbilt at a relatively more raw level in terms of ball handling, playmaking, that, you know, it's not at the level of D'Lo, much less LeBron, but at times you'd watch and go like, oh, that's interesting. You know, look at Jared Vanderbilt rip down that rebound, go coast to coast, then dish off at the last minute, you know, really nice playmaking. Like there were times where Jared Vanderbilt would be pretty intriguing that way. Or, once the team was whole, especially LeBron, because so much runs through LeBron, you're being asked to do that less. And obviously, Jared Vanderbilt doing that stuff can become less effective against better competition anyway. But from his perspective, though, I'm just talking about this from Jared Vanderbilt's perspective. And so it's clear he was not complaining about any of this. I think he understands when LeBron comes back, I'm going to take a back seat. I don't think Jared Vanderbilt is...
Point Vanderbilt is not...
Yeah, I don't think Jared Vanderbilt was trying to hint around the idea of, I think it's time for LeBron to cede some control to me. Mm-hmm. But in terms of your overall utility or the things that you can do, or if nothing else, the things that you showed at times you can do during a period where, look, the Lakers needed to win a lot of games... And Jared Vanderbilt was often important during that period. You know, that's where being asked to do less can, in certain respects, feel like it's backfiring for you as an individual player.
Well, yeah. And you always want to feel as a player like you are contributing the fullest extent of your skill set. And, you know, none of these guys get to this level and don't think they have a little more in their bag than they're being allowed to do unless they are Giannis or LeBron or, you know, one of these people who's literally allowed to do anything that they want.
Or Bismack Biyombo.
Right. If you're like, asked,
my bag's empty.
Yeah. If you're asked to play a role, he might be the exception to rule.
My bag's
please do not ask me to do any more than what I'm already doing. That this is it. There is no plan B here. but they all think they have a little bit. But the fun of Vanderbilt's an interesting comp, because the biggest reason to me that Vanderbilt is a guy who you can play off the floor, who has much more difficulty as a postseason player than a regular season player, is because while he is more than I think just an energy player, he's got skill beyond that, especially as a defender and all those kinds of things. A lot of his value is the fact that he plays at a 99 during the regular season when most people are playing at an 85, you know, in terms of motor and engine and effort.
Sure.
In the playoffs, everybody's playing at a 99. And so that edge that he gains is not as useful. And then the shortcomings that he has are bit. Now, it's why D'Lo was
Just so it's clear, I'm not making apples to apples. I'm just talking about how players see it.
Right, of course. But it's why D'Lo's failures in the playoffs were far more important to the Lakers than Vanderbilt's, you know, shortcomings or whatever. Because D'Lo's value is based on skills and, you know, that kind of production and stuff like that. Like, they needed him to shoot 36% in that series. They needed him to score 15 to 20. Not 14. Well, just not 14.
From the field, even 36%.
Right. And I'm supporting D'Lo. He was terrible in this series. I mean, I'm supporting the concept of bringing him back. I think he's a good player and all that kind of stuff. He was bad in this series. But I think what we learned, and this is why the Kyrie thing, like, even for people who don't like it, you could watch that series going, man, you know, backcourt scoring, three-point shooting, creativity, back, man, it would make a huge difference in this series. The skill set of Russell was badly needed and completely didn't show up. I just don't think that's a reason to let him just assume that he has no business being on this team. If somebody wants to give him $30 million, go with God. I'm not matching that. But if they let him walk for 20, 21, 22, I think that would be a mistake, because I think Russell has value as a playoff player. And I think he has tremendous value for this team as a regular season player. And so does Vanderbilt, for that matter. And the Lakers have to build a team. If assuming LeBron comes back and assuming AD is there and all that, they need a team that goes 12 or 13 deep so that they can keep LeBron and AD as healthy as possible, that they can kind of stay in that top four comfortably, where you're not scrambling in February, March, April to solidify playoff position. And the guys who can do that for you are the D'Angelo Russells and the Jared Vanderbilts and the players like that.
It was
really important to bring back.
Look, it was similar why in the season after the championship, when, you know, it was that quick turnaround from the bubble, bringing in Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder made sense, because mm-hmm. you needed guys who in theory could eat a lot of innings. And I think actually those guys did.
Yeah.
Last thing.
Just hurt. Yeah. So I'm saying it doesn't have to be D'Angelo Russell specifically, but if you just let him go, you better replace the production.
Last thing I wanted to ask you with D'Lo, when he was asked about going to the bench for Game 4, he said that it was tough. Mm-hmm. And he also said, quote, it was tough to agree with it, obviously. And then later added that he focused on being professional. He understood, you know, the context of where they were. I mean, he even said in so many words, I don't even have time to argue about this. Right. If I
you say, and dominate your minutes that you play. And
right.
So on.
There's no indications that he handled this poorly. So I want to make sure that is clear. In terms of anything you've seen, anything you've heard, whatever, that he handled this anything other than professional. Does the idea that he didn't agree with it at all, given the way he was playing, does that say anything to you at all?
Yeah, it says he does. It says he didn't doesn't want to. He doesn't like being demoted to the bench.
No,
anything. Anything other than that, that answer was the correct answer and the truthful answer that any player in that situation would have gave. A better, more political answer is, "I sucked. I was letting my team down. And I think Darvin, I volunteered to come off the bench because I'm just not doing the job or whatever. Okay. I mean, would that be great? Sure. But that none of these guys do that because they are incredibly competitive. They're incredibly prideful. And the part that matters to me is, did you pitch a fit? Did you argue about it? Did you, you know, did you throw an attitude around? Did you pout when you went into the game in game four? The answer, like you said, seems to be no to all that stuff. I would have been more disappointed if he's like, yep, I was totally cool with it. Because no player should be cool with being taken out of the starting lineup or benched or any of those.
It's not the idea of being cool with it. I'm talking about the agreeing with it. I'm talking specifically about that because that the reason I say that is just the idea that you don't even think it's necessary.
I don't think as a player. Because I think he thinks that if I keep playing that I'm going to be better.
Okay.
That I always, as a professional athlete, believe in my ability to go out and play the next game well, even if the last three have sucked. And that is the attitude that, you know, again, I think most players, if they answered the other way, would be lying in one way or another.
Sure.
And so I just don't think he lied. I think he thought that if he started that one, like, I can go be better. I understand that I'm not playing well, but I think I'm really good and I can help this team win. And if I play 35 minutes in this game, there'll be 35 minutes that will help us win. He's wrong in this case. And he wasn't performing in that way. And I didn't have a problem with being taken out of the starting lineup, but I also didn't have a problem with the answer. The performative aspects of these things are different to me than, look, if we find out, you know, a couple weeks from now, like, you know, it was actually worse than that, or, you know, guys, he was pouting in the locker room before the game or wasn't, you know, providing the normal sense of energy and team and all that he tends to do. It's one of the reasons I think, you know, he was so valuable to this team. He brought a lightness and an energy in the post Westbrook era that was really important for this team as they were trying to get in the playoffs.
Sure.
If that changed, then I would agree with you or whoever that's problematic. But his actual answer of I didn't like it, I didn't agree with it, but I did it, is the answer that is in that normal range of how any athlete in the same situation would answer if they're being honest to me.
That's fine. The answer didn't really bother me either. I was just curious what you thought of it.
I am 100% sure people in the comments section will be like, you're just sticking up to him too much, you're defending him too much and all that kind of stuff. That I've been around it long enough to kind of decide that some of the performative aspects of it just don't matter. I think where people can honestly disagree with me is just how good they think Russell is. But I mean, if you jettison every player who has a bad final series before you're eliminated every year, you're gonna have a lot of trouble bringing back a roster from year to year.
Lakers wouldn't have kept Lamar Odom and Pau Gasol after they
traded Kobe after he was a rookie.
Yeah.
You know, so, all right. Anyway, Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show. We'll get into this LeBron stuff because these things are all interrelated with how you build a roster around LeBron James. Get into all that for Friday's show. Of course, starting to look forward to the draft and potential free agency and potential trades and all that stuff. It's going to be a crazy, wild, and woolly summer. And we appreciate everybody sticking with us. See you next time. Mm-hmm.